Welcome to The Evolution of a Snake, Episode 6, 2010, Part 2. We are so happy that you're here joining us. Please make sure to follow us on Spotify, rate us 5 stars on the podcast app, and subscribe to us on Apple Music. We'll just get right into it. Here we are talking about the Mine music video release.
So the 27th, the music video comes out with Toby Hemingway. I have referred to him in the notes as a mysterious figure.
He's a very mysterious figure because I think that his only notable other role was like in a horror movie. Wasn't it like The Conjuring or something? It was like something.
Yeah, he was in a scary, or Black Swan.
Was he in Black Swan? Yeah, so he was in a scary movie. And he's a dark, mysterious character. He's hot.
We don't know much. Yeah, we don't. I think Taylor just maybe made out with him once. And then when she was doing the secret messages, she was like, all right, like this song isn't about anyone else. So he can have it.
There you go, little buddy.
Do I think that was a serious relationship? I don't.
But it was probably steamy.
But the music video was really cute. I love the video.
Honestly, it probably has like one of my most favorite visuals from her videos of all time when she's in the forest and she's got the white dress on.
Oh, I know.
And the pictures are hanging from the trees.
The pictures hanging down from the strings.
Really shattered the glass ceiling. It really did. It changed everything for me personally.
Again, as we know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg has been out of a job for a while.
Because Taylor just keeps taking her first fucking seat.
But yeah, that was a really great visual. I loved that. The video was really cute, but what pisses me off is that it's not available in high def. Like, where is the good quality version of the Speak Now videos? They all suck.
That's actually a really good point, because I feel like I have a very distinct memory of watching blurry shit every single time I've watched it. It's like blurry.
Yes, it was all blurry.
I wonder if that was like a...
It's not horrible quality, but it's not like
clear. It's like they used
like
a blur effect on it. Because I remember when they're like on the beach, I definitely remember there was a blur effect. Like, oh, fade in, fade out sort of a thing, but it's like done poorly. That was a Roman White, wasn't it? Do you know that?
Yes, it was.
It was.
I remember the music videos from the Speak Now era being the bane of my existence because I was making GIFs on Tumblr.com at that time. And I, for the life of me, could not get good quality versions of the music videos to make into nice GIFs. Back to December is like her worst quality video of all time.
A weird filter on it or something. I don't know, because I've thought the exact same thing. I've tried to edit pictures from that video because I thought it was really pretty. But then it's like you tried to fucking edit it and it just like comes out like shit because they did something to it.
Yeah.
It's fucking, I don't know. It kind of pisses me off because that's a really nice video.
We deserve HD versions of these, and they exist, and I want them. I'm just saying. If we can get Tim McGraw in HD, I can
Jesus
get mine.
Jesus Christ, yeah. We got Tim McGraw in, like, full version surround sound, super HD. And I don't need it. I don't want it.
On September 9th, she does her first televised performance of Mine, and You Belong With Me at the NFL kickoff, which, as we know, was a controversial time for the Taylor Swift fans.
Yes. The performance itself is passable. It's not bad. It's not great.
It's fine.
It's just like,
yeah,
okay.
It's okay.
But the thing about it is that people, for whatever reason, including, I think, me, at the time, completely roasted her fucking asshole. And this was for what she was wearing, her outfit. And
yes. I remember it being a little controversial. It was like a lot of skin and then the collar.
Yeah,
I think
like,
that's what people just didn't like.
It was
the red
it
lip.
Was roasted so hard that like when I thought of it to talk about it on the podcast, and I was like imagining the outfit in my head, and I was like, oh my god, it was so bad. And then I looked it up and I looked at it and I was like, this is not as bad as I remember. Like the collar, yeah, I could have done without it. It doesn't absolutely ruin the dress. Like
it's really just a classic Taylor dress. Like, that's
God,
what
people
it is.
Hate it.
The color
they said,
is the exception.
They said that she looked like a fucking figure skater. And they hated the red lip. And I think this was the first time that somebody said, is she ever going to go outside again when she's not wearing red lipstick? Because she wore it. She wore it at the VMAs, and then she wore it at the Met Gala. And then she wore it several times after that. And I think this, for some whatever fucking reason, because she didn't wear it in the Mine video, and she didn't wear it on the live chat. But
in any of the other videos,
somebody was mad. I don't know how else to put it.
Somebody was mad.
And then it became this whole thing about, like, is she ever going to take off the black boots? Is she ever going to stop wearing red lipstick?
Yeah.
She looks like a fucking figure skater. nobody even cared about the music anymore. It was all about the this and the that and the blah. And I'll be honest with you, I was part of it.
Me too. I was kind of mad that she was doing a red lip all the time. I was like, what does she think she's doing? Is this going to be her new look? And you know what? I got served because it was her new look, and I just had to put up with it. Yeah,
that's the thing. And I remember kind of wishing she would stop doing it too. And I don't really know why. Like, why did everybody hate the red lip?
There was some vague slut shaming going on for no apparent reason, because she was like kind of showing her shoulders. She was not showing cleavage, but she was showing like chest and the red lip. So I think people were like, I remember people being like, she's just becoming like any other slutty pop star. And that's not what I signed up for.
Oh, yes. Back in the day, I guess it was 2010. So, you know, people.
We weren't woke. No, we were not woke at that time.
When I think about it now, it's just so weird. I'm actually kind
of
shook.
So, yeah, we get that performance. It's kind of a mess in terms of the response. The performance itself is fine. And then September 12, 2010, sigh, Taylor performs Innocent at the VMAs.
I don't think this was her best move at fucking all. I thought this was a dumbass decision made by a fucking dumbass. Not her. Probably Scott Borchetta or some other fucko.
Someone was like, let's capitalize on this drama and get the promo and serve everyone. Show them all.
Because, you know, the thing is that all that really did was really poor gasoline on the already small fire that suggested that she likes to play the victim all the time. That's really all that did, because, you know, the song's message itself is obviously like a really nice message. You know, it's more than Kanye ever fucking deserved, I can tell you that. But it's like people didn't get that. Yes. When I went to school the next day and I was like talking to my friend about it, and somebody was like,
she needs to let it go.
Somebody was like, she was just like bitching about how like she was attacked on stage and like how she's innocent and all this other stuff. And I looked at her and I was like, did you even listen to the song? That's like not what happened. It was not about how she's innocent. God. But people really thought that.
I remember being shocked because we hadn't heard this song. This was like, she just pulled it out for the VMAs. It was not going to be a single. She had a perfectly good single that needed some promo at the time.
You know what?
And
that
yet,
pisses me off.
She chose to do this.
We didn't get to hear Mine. We got to hear this fucking Innocent, which Innocent. I never right. heard the
I like
end
that
of
song,
it.
But not for that performance. No. I will say, she looked amazing. And I loved the barefoot
thing.
Oh,
I love that. And that steel guitar she was playing was super nice.
Oh, yes. And the wind and the like stormy room, that was really cool. Yeah. But it was the wrong choice. In early October, we get 4 pre-releases from the album, excluding Innocent. So we got fed really well. First of all, we got Speak Now, then we got Back to December, then we got Mean, and then we got The Story of Us. And I think that collection of songs is pretty misleading for what the album's going to be about.
Yeah, I think that Speak Now is a really bad,
really
bad title track, really bad example for what the album's going to be like. You know, it's just like, for that to be the message of the song, which is pretty much just like a super campy, jokey song about interrupting a wedding and something that didn't actually happen, but this is gonna be your like symbol of the album for this really deep meaning, is this fucking joke ass of a song. And not a joke because it's bad, or at least I think it's bad, but also because she literally, it's a joke. People are always like, why do you hate Speak Now, the song? And I'm like, because it's fucking stupid.
It sucks. It's bad. Like, it's just, it's unnecessary. I don't want to hear it again.
Yeah.
Like, I really never want to hear it again. Do you remember Scott Borchetta gave an interview where he was like, Taylor wanted to call the album Enchanted, but I said that you're too old for this now. Like, this is that's an immature name about like fairy tales, and that's misleading. Like, this album is about more than that. And Taylor came back and was like, okay, I want to make it Speak Now. And the concept behind calling it Speak Now, like saying things that you wouldn't normally say and like confessions, that's a really good idea. The song just doesn't support it. Speak Now came out and I was like, wow, I'm not excited. At this point, we have Innocent and Speak Now. And I was like,
do you know what made me really, really, really not excited? Which is so funny in hindsight. I hated the album cover. I thought it was absolute fucking garbage. Yeah, I remember very specifically that I thought that
I loved
that. That was an indication that the album's gonna be so fucking bad and like all this other stuff. I was like, oh, this is like she's finally she's gonna make a bad album. I just know she is. Went off bed all the time. People hated me. They were like, shut up, Madeline. You don't know anything.
I'm not surprised. You were being a bitch.
I was being a fucking bitch.
No, I loved the album cover. I thought it was so cute. I was like 13 when this came out. So, of course, this like whimsical thing, I was like, yeah. I prefer it in red, I will say. I prefer it in red than I do in purple.
I'm bipartisan on that. I think I like both of them equally. And I did eventually learn to really love that album cover, by the way. I just hated it at the time because I was sort of on the streak because of Today Was a Fairy Tale.
So then we get back to December. Fucking legend snap. I guess we'll get into all the songs as we go through the album. But all of the pre-releases debuted within the top 20, which is pretty fucking cool.
That actually is really fucking cool.
Her power.
Her power, even back then.
So right before the album comes out, she flies to New York City to go and do album promo, as she always does. And she attends a taping of SNL that Emma Stone is hosting. And who is there? Jake Gyllenhaal. And after that, they go to an after party together. And they also get lunch in Brooklyn with Emma Stone the next day.
I completely forgot that the entire Speak Now album release was like encapsulated.
Her
dating fucking Jake Gyllenhaal. Wow. Wow.
She really went after that old man dick this year.
She did. She was into the older guys. And then, and it's
she learned
funny,
her lesson.
Funny.
She learned
she
her lesson.
She immediately went back to guys who were too young for her.
Because courtship begins.
Courtship.
It was very short-lived. Mm-hmm. So keep in mind, it starts on October 23rd. Then October 25th, the world changes. Speak Now is dropped. It sells over a million copies in the first week. And it at the time, it was the biggest debut of a country album ever.
Ever.
Taylor writes everything by herself, which is largely a response to criticism that someone else was pulling the strings behind the scenes and writing her songs for her. And Nathan Chapman does all of the production. So it was a really tight team, two people, and it receives critical acclaim with a lot of praise for the songwriting. There's some criticism of the production and tracks like Better Than Revenge and Mean. Fair.
Wait a second. Somebody criticized the production of Better Than Revenge?
So some people criticized the production in general and then specifically targeted Mean and Better Than Revenge.
Okay. I was going to say, all the things you can say about Better Than Revenge, it having a bad production is not one of
them. Not true. Yeah. Not true. Rolling Stone writes, this is one of my favorite reviews of Taylor, is that they write that Dear John is a particularly scathing takedown because it resembles a John Mayer song so much.
I remember reading that.
Like the bluesy strings.
I remember that so clearly.
Oh.
I think that was the...
And when I thought about it, I was like, she snapped. Oh my God, she really did. She really was like, I'm going to fucking burn him to the ground. She did.
That and like the thing about that is like sometimes you read, because that article came out right before the album came out and I was trying not to listen to leaks. So I read the article, blah, blah, blah. And when I actually heard the song, that was one of the few times when such a glowing review of a song like actually wasn't a letdown. I was like, oh no, this really is scathing.
And then we get some candids of her buying her album in Starbucks. I didn't even, they were selling her album in Starbucks?
Well, I'm sure she rallied for that.
Yeah, I'm sure that's something she really got behind. And then Target as well. So we got candids. I love the candids of her buying her album. I think it's so funny and self-indulgent. So I guess we'll just hop straight into the album and we'll go through each song and the secret messages. So mine, Toby, is the secret message. I mean, what is there? We've said everything about
it. Yeah, we
mine.
Have. It's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing.
Number two, Sparks Fly.
Oh my God.
And the message is Portland, Oregon, because that's where she played it for the first time, bitches.
So the thing about this is that this was actually the one song, I think, that I allowed myself to listen to before the leak. It leaked really early because everyone knew it existed. You know, before the track list was even out. So, of course, it leaked before everything else because we knew it. So it leaked and a lot of people were like, I'm not going to listen to it. And I was like, I have to. I have to. I need to
I have
hear
to listen to this
song. I've been waiting for years to hear the fucking, the produced version of the song. And I have to tell you, it went the fuck off. I was
Oh, it
slapped.
Delivered. It delivered so well. Sparks Fly came in, as you said about the other side of the door, she came in and spanked me.
She did.
She did.
Spanked my bottom. And
she did.
So I remember that a lot of people were really concerned at the time. They're like, she's got to completely change it. And my big reassurance, the only thing that I ever said about that song after it leaked and I listened to it publicly was that nobody should worry about how she changes it because the changes that she did make she did make, excuse me, were good.
Little lyrical details. I personally prefer the lyrics of the first version.
Yes, yeah. The most important part to everybody was the bridge. And she kept the bridge completely intact. It was just as I fucking would have imagined it would be. It was so perfect. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you.
And the production was so good. And drop everything now. I can't.
Just drop it.
And the Speak Now tour just elevated this to a whole other level, this song for me. Like, oh my God, that is one of my favorite Taylor performances ever.
Ever.
Sparks Fly really came in and said, hey, I'm a legend. And we said, yes, you are. So the third song is Back to December. And the secret message is Tay. Wow, I wonder who this song
is. I really wonder.
She's being really
vague and coy, you know, and I'm not clear. Who has tan skin? I'm not sure.
And a sweet smile.
This is one of my top five favorite Taylor Swift songs ever, always.
I agree. I really love this song so much. The bridge just gets me every single time.
The thing that gets me, the lyric that always, it's like, no matter how many years it's been, the one that gets me is when she says, when your birthday passed and I didn't call. It's like, oh my God. Imagine
you're such a bitch.
You mean to him. He's so gentle.
I remember hearing this for the first time and being like, oh my God, they're going to get back together. Did you also think that? I was like, wow.
Yeah.
This is her sorry, and he's going to say, okay, and then they're going to get married.
Yeah, I did think that. I was like waiting for the day. But no, it never came. It never, ever came.
It never came. But, and this is the only song that we have about Taylor Lautner. To be honest, Madeline,
without jumping into some conspiracy theories. I do have my conspiracy theories, but I'll save those for a later date. There are more songs about Taylor Lautner, but I won't get into that now. You just prepare yourselves, ladies, because you're going to be shook.
I would say that this is an album highlight for sure. A point about the secret messages, they're very fucking direct. Like, these secret messages don't play. No. This is the most direct she's been with her messages ever.
She said,
like, they're so clear who they're about.
She said she was going to speak now, and she did.
She spoke then.
She spoke then.
She hasn't been speaking now.
No. She completely forgot the message of speak now altogether. She said, I will speak never. Thank you.
Number four, I don't even think we need to really talk about this that much, but it's Speak Now, the song. You always regret what you don't say is the message. And this song is just so dumb. I really don't get it.
And, you know, and it's like, if this was not the title track, I would have been fine with it, but the fact that it's the title track, that's really what irks me about it. But anyway, I've already gone into
it. It doesn't make sense to me.
But you know, one thing that we didn't say was that the song itself is about Hayley Williams. It's an experience that Hayley Williams had.
Yeah.
She went to a wedding for somebody that I guess she was in love with, and she was like thinking about, you know, like, oh, blah, 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 whatever. And Taylor was like, oh, write a song about that. And she did.
So then we get the legendary track five, the mystique Dear John. And the secret message is loved you from the very first day, which breaks my heart.
It's funny that you say that it breaks your heart, because that's a lyric from your least favorite song.
Which
Superman.
One? Oh my God, fuck that. I hate that shit. I don't even know the lyrics. I hate that song. I played myself.
You did. You fucking played yourself.
Dear John, what can we say? It is almost a 7-minute song, which is crazy.
Insane.
She was being a rebel on this album. Most of the songs clock in at about 5 minutes, that's not how people make albums now. And like, if you want something to be a radio hit, your song cannot be that long. So this just showed that all she cared about was like making a really good album, like a career defining album.
And you know what? She fucking did it.
It was.
It fucking was.
She did it.
The thing about this song specifically is that there's not a single lyric that you're like, oh, okay, this is filler, or this isn't a very good lyric, this isn't blah blah blah, this is just like, you know, a piece of the story that's not very interesting or whatever you want to say. Every single fucking lyric in that fucking song
riveting.
Is like, and the fact that it's so long, it's the best, objectively the best song she has ever written. I know a lot of people are going to be like,
I agree. The songwriting.
All Too Well.
No,
Too Well.
I think this is better than,
it's
All,
better
too
than
well.
All Too Well.
This is better
it's
than,
better
all,
than
too
all,
well.
All Too Well.
What is there to say?
I know. It's like one of those things.
It absolutely slapped us in the face.
It fucking speaks for itself.
Yeah. Go listen to it. If you haven't heard it, go listen to it. And it just, I don't know. I remember hearing that song and being like, wow, fuck John Mayer. Seriously. Like, actually.
Seriously, fuck him.
And then we have track number six, Mean, and the secret messages. I thought you got me. Oh, you thought Bob was going to come and kill you in the middle of the night? Okay. You thought that?
Absolutely.
That's interesting.
Kills me. If you haven't seen what Bob Lefsetz looks like, you need to Google him right now and tell me
Google
if this
him.
Is a man that you would fear. Because it's not.
This is like when Taylor said, my daddy's going to show you how sorry exactly. you'll be. It's not realistic. Exactly. What irritated me so much about this song is that it's about someone being mean to her. And like, this is a classic. If we're going to talk about like victim Taylor, this is one of those songs. And she's like, you're so mean and I'm so good. And then at the end, she's like, you know, you're just pathetic and a liar and alone in life. But you're the mean one.
Yeah, you know, I actually have had that thought myself. She's talking about how mean somebody else is, but then she's gonna come in for the kill as well. So it's like, I mean, it would be one thing if she didn't kind of make the point in the song that she's better than him in a way, because she...
But she did.
But she did. So she says, you can't lead me down that road. Sadly enough, he did lead her down that road.
She went there. She said, okay, let's go.
Getting the impression that you don't like the song very much. Personally, like, I do think that there's, like, a couple of issues with it. But in my opinion, it kind of has, like, a purpose. I mean, I've listened to it after somebody's been mean to me. And I have to tell you, it's very empowering.
I agree. I think when I was 14, this song meant a lot to me. But now that I'm 22, I'm just kind of like, eh. To note, this was the biggest radio hit from the album, strangely. This is the song she carried through. This is the one that she was like, okay, maybe I'll accept this from Speak Now on future tours.
That's so strange.
Then we get The Story of Us, and the secret message for this is the CMT Award.
To me, personally, if I'm being honest, this is probably the song that's like the most throwaway from the album. So it was crazy to me that she released it as a single. Which I think she only did because it's one of the shorter songs.
It's a more pop song,
it's a bit more
of
a bop, but it's not one of my favorites. I think it's like probably bottom three, honestly, if I'm speaking my truth. Yeah, bottom three of Speak Now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bop.
I like it. The part of the song I really like is the, I've never heard silence quite this loud.
There are some actually really good lyrics, but the thing is that it's one of those songs that she has where it's actually really fucking sad, but because it's like, it's like hard to get sad. I wish that she had released a different version of it, because I think it really could have been a very fucking sad song, if I'm speaking my truth.
Track 8, Never Grow Up, the secret message is I moved out in July. This is another song we're going to go to the mat on.
It is my least favorite song on the album. I feel like in the past I've said that I think it's shit. Like, I think I've said that I think it's bad. I've grown up now, so now I will not say that I think it's... I don't think that it's a bad song. It's just not something that I would ever, like, oh, I'm going to listen to Never Grow Up because I'm in the mood for it. I'm never in the mood for it. I never want to hear it. I don't think it's bad.
Okay, I can accept that. I think it's a really, it's a sweet song. It's a quiet moment on the album. The production tends to be kind of intense, so I like that it's just the guitar and her. And I really like the storytelling of this song. I think it's very personal. It's not a top 10. Speaking of a bop, we move on to track number 9, Enchanted. And the message is Adam.
I would like to, we're going to get into Adam, but I would like to just open up the conversation with just talking about the song itself, because this is quintessential Taylor Swift music. This, whenever somebody's like,
for real,
this is what her songwriting is. This is what her production is like at the time. You know, for her first four albums, I would have said this is a Taylor Swift song. I think I would even say it now. This is Taylor Swift.
It's long, it's swooning,
it's
wistful,
so fucking
it's
good.
Pining.
It's good.
When she duets with herself and she does the like the please don't be in love with someone else. Oh my god.
Times when I was shook. The first fucking time I listened to the song and I heard that part, I could have shot myself. It was too much for me to emotionally deal. The amount of times that I probably went back and just listened to that one part again and again and again and again. Oh my god. It's an incredible song.
I think when the second chorus kicked in, I was like, oh my god. Like, this is like kind of a, this is like a pop rock song. This is like, this gets really intense towards
the production
end.
The
production
on
this is just Nathan Chapman. Chef's kiss.
Bon appetit. Nathan Chapman. It really is.
To this day, one of her greatest
absolutely.
Ballads,
and it's crazy
I would
say. To me. I can't necessarily say that it's underrated because, oh, so many stans, you know, love the song, whatever. But I would say that it's mid-range rated when it should be number one rated of all time. But it's just like in the middle. People forget
about
it. I never forget. It's in my dream. And I would say that the quality of it is not lessened by the fact that it's about the Owl City guy. I think about it sometimes.
It taints the memory.
The memory a little bit. And if he hadn't have released that cover of it that he did, it wouldn't have been as tainted. Oh, but sometimes God. When I listen to it chanted by Taylor Swift, I'm like, And then I think about Adam Young's version, and that's just like full body cringe.
So we should explain the Adam Young thing, right? Like, we should get into that.
He is Owl City.
Oh, there's no one else in the band? So Taylor goes backstage to meet him at someone else's show earlier in the year. And for some unknown reason, she is bowled over by him. And I was like, maybe he was cute back then. I went and found the picture of them together. He is a crusty, musty, like, geeky, ugly person. Like, he just is. He's a cringy person. Like, compared to the John Mayers of the world and the Jake Gyllenhaals, like, Adam Young.
He's very outspoken in the fact that he is very, very, very awkward. He's very introverted. He's an insomniac. He's a complete nerd, not just in looks, but also in the mind. So it's like, it's crazy to me to think about the fact that Taylor would have had a conversation with him that could have enchanted her in any way, shape, or form, because he's so fucking awkward. And I know this, not just because he said it, because I've watched interviews, and he's hard to watch.
He just strikes me as a loser. Like, no offense to him, but, like, he's just kind of a dud of a person, you know? And he also has been very outspoken about, like, conservative values and, like, weird things like that. So
this is a bit of tea. That is that he,
I don't mind bashing
way
him.
Back in the day when he was really big on... for people who were like on Tumblr and were really into that kind of like indie vibe, listening to Hello Seattle and all that kind of shit by Owl City. But like a lot of people would message him, and he had mentioned being religious. And so somebody asked him, what do you think about gay people? And he said something. I won't say that he said gay people are going to burn in hell, but I do have a vague memory of him saying that he wasn't 100% cool with it.
Something
and
bad.
I also
yeah.
have a very vague, specific memory, not vague, very specific, of him saying that he was anti-abortion. Which, at the time, you could not say something like that on Tumblr.com and get away with it. So, it's like...
No, you couldn't. That was, like, the place to go and burn.
So, it wasn't just that he...
Like that. Maybe Facebook you could have gotten away with
like
it.
Christian. It was also the fact that he was Christian and kind of a ding-a-ling.
That's why it's embarrassing that this song is about him. But what's more embarrassing is the response. So, Adam Young hears this song, figures out that it's about him, and... all we can presume is that he blew Taylor's phone the fuck up trying to get in touch with her. I know that he sent emails to her manager, her publicist. I know that he did that. Like, in my heart, I know that he exhausted all modes of communication to try and tell Taylor that he was ready to date her.
So fucking embarrassing.
And Taylor had moved on. She was in a serious adult relationship at this point. She wasn't interested in Adam Young anymore. It was a moment that passed. And Adam Young decided to... make a public appeal,
which is how you know that a guy's a piece of shit. Like, you ghost him and you're like, I'm done with you, and then he decides that he's gonna humiliate you. And I did not think about this way at the time, but now as an adult I see it that way. He's gonna humiliate you by going public with it, and now you have to respond.
She really said cricket. He wrote this long dramatic ass letter and then recorded his own version of Enchanted. I was never in love with someone else. I never had somebody waiting on me. We know. I don't know. I don't think there'd be people lining up to take you out on a date. If you love the song Enchanted and you've never heard Adam Young's response, don't listen to it.
You have to really fucking look for it.
I was surprised that he wasn't slapped with a copyright lawsuit.
Well,
that's the interesting thing, Adam Young.
Is that, okay, now that you brought that up, you have to. If you're going to cover a song, you have to go through the proper copyright channels. You need to contact somebody in the Taylor Swift camp. And be like, I'm going to cover this song.
To approve that. I don't understand why she had to call him out in the secret message. Just give us a vague message. Why do this to yourself and invite this horrible discourse?
And, you know, it's like, he even says in his letter that he thought the song sounded familiar. But then he had, because he's a fucking creep and a stalker, he knew that she did secret messages. So he went through and he found the secret message and he saw his bitch ass name. If she had never done that, then maybe she could have spared a man humiliation. But did she?
Then we get a 10, Better Than Revenge. So the secret message to this is, you thought I would forget. Feminism off.
Precisely.
Than
That's what I'm
on.
Saying. Because this song... Oh, no. When it doesn't, it slaps. Like, you cannot deny that song pops the fuck off.
Oh, it goes off.
It goes to the moon with how hard it fucking goes. Yeah, I do agree that she should never play it live again, but the live performance of it was a spank.
Oh, that slap too. But unfortunately, she also slapped her female backup singers when she was performing. Oh, yeah.
I forgot about that.
Was not. I think a that good I
completely blocked that from my memory. In my heart of hearts, I knew that probably the slaps on tour probably solidified everything into being like, oh, this isn't good.
She's publicly been like, I don't like this song, and I regret writing it, and I regret putting it out. And we won't hear this song again from her mouth. Never. But yeah, you just gotta turn your values off and like turn up the volume and get going when you put the song on. Then we have 11, Innocent, Life is Full of Little Interruptions. I mean, we've kind of discussed this. I think it's a good song. It's okay. I used to really like it. And now in more recent years, I've kind of been like, okay, this is a little dramatic.
Yeah, it's very dramatic. Like, I mean, I know it was like a huge moment for her, but like it's over the top.
And now we move on to Haunted.
The secret message is still to this day. Madeline, what are your thoughts?
So for me, that particular secret message is probably the most secret message, because, I mean, I guess one could argue I'm haunted still to this day, but it's very mysterious to me. It could mean anything. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, you know, the should have said no secret message where it's just a Sam again and again and again. Obviously, we know what that means. This one in particular is, it's a little mysterious.
It is a bit of a mystery. And I wonder what she's haunted by and who did this haunting to her. Because I'm sure you would love to make the argument that it's Taylor Lautner.
I would love to make the argument that many a song is about Taylor Lautner.
I like Haunted because I think it's a song from her that we haven't really heard anything like since. It was very Evanescence, very pop rock, punk here and there.
Yeah, it was definitely and probably one of her most dramatic tour performances, if I'm being honest with you, because you can hear the bells in the background of the music. It's one of those things that you don't pick up on the first, you know, 100 or maybe even 200 times you listen to it, but it's definitely super in the background, that bell ringing. And I knew, like, she's gonna have bells on stage, like gigantic fucking bells, like, this should have said no drums, and I was right. There's no other way for her to
and
go.
What did she do?
And she gets into the bell at the end of it. And I absolutely love it.
I love when she pretends to hit the bell, but she doesn't actually hit it. She like very dramatically like swings and then stops right before
the bell doesn't even like move. Like it doesn't, you know, when you hit a bell, it like vibrates. It doesn't vibrate. It's not a real bell. I'm telling you, it's paper mache. But it doesn't matter. It looks good.
I think that it's a little motif of Camille Bell, who at this point, Taylor Swift would like to beat the shit out
exactly.
of.
Exactly. Precisely. That's what I think, too.
All right, so Haunted, we love it. It's a long song. We get vocals. We get a lot of vocals in this song. Uh-huh.
Probably, I think that this song and Dear John are probably her best vocals on the album over in terms of, like, holding a note. Like a long note.
Yeah.
Definitely for sure. Which is funny because
it's Mariah Carey, Taylor.
It's so underrated as being a great vocal performance from her, but like it is.
Okay, so the next song is one of my favorite Taylor Swift songs of all time. It is number one or number two. It is Last Kiss, and the secret message is Forever and Always, which gags me to this day.
That is probably it's a gag. It's probably one of the saddest secret messages just because of everything. I mean, in the context of the song and who it's about, just thinking about Forever and Always, I mean, it's almost too fucking sad for me to deal with.
What I love about Last Kiss is that it's part of a trilogy, and I call it the Holy Trinity of Taylor Swift songs. So it starts with Forever and Always, then it goes to Last Kiss, and it ends very nicely with Holy Ground. And if you think about the progression of emotion within those three songs and her personal maturity that is shown through the connection of those three songs, I would like to give her a Grammy for this specific motif that she carried through. I love Last Kiss. I think it is some of her best detailed emotional lyrical writing. I think that the song is hauntingly beautiful, not to bring Haunted back into this. It's one of those like sit in your room and cry songs, and I love those songs from Taylor.
Absolutely. And that's the other thing about it is that, I mean, it is so lyric focused. It's not it's not heavy on the production, but the production itself is so good in that, like, really simplistic way. Those fucking, those chords, the bow, 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 it's so sad. But, like, what you said about, you know, the progression of Taylor writing about the same relationship for so long, all those fucking songs that she wrote about Joe Jonas, if you follow them all the way down to the end and then think about how they can, like, hang out and, like, have a conversation now, it makes me think a lot about how people said that how immature and stupid she was when she was 18, 19 for roasting the shit out of Joe Jonas all over fucking every media she could get to. But it's like, I feel like she never got enough credit for being a teenage girl who was mad at an ex-boyfriend. And then it's like, she also never gets enough credit for writing Forever and Always and then writing Last Kiss about being sad as shit about it instead of angry anymore. And then finally Acceptance and moving the fuck on. You know what I mean? Like, nobody ever gives her credit for that because you would only ever know that progression if you were a stan.
And they're also all deep cuts. None of these songs were singles, so this one really is for the fans. And I think that Taylor's most successful when she's communicating directly with us versus communicating with the general public. So I really loved the fact that we got to have these very intimate moments with Taylor, and we get to see how her character has developed throughout the years. That's why I love Last Kiss, because I feel like it, being angry is so easy, and being pissed off and feeling wronged is, like, such an easy emotion to feel. But being sad and feeling yourself be sad and wallowing for a little bit is really hard to get to because it hurts.
You're totally right.
All
right,
so the next song is
Long Live, and the secret message is for you.
I don't think we have to spend too long ruminating over what that could possibly mean. It was for me, everybody. And
me, yes, specifically.
Yes, me and Zach only. Everybody else, get out. But
thank you, Ned.
I absolutely love this song, and I think it's really funny because it's such a weird song. Like, if you think about it, she's sitting there. I mean, I know it's mostly about her band, which in that perspective kind of changes the way that you look at it. But something about, like, the phrases that she chooses to use, like thinking about, like, people having kids and, like, all this other shit that she talks about, it's, like, weird. But there is also just, like, a kernel of, like, some of her best songwriting. I think there's really good songwriting on that song, and honestly, for a song that's written mostly about her fans, nobody appreciates it enough. Think about that. Nobody ever fucking talks about it ever.
Well, I have a different opinion.
Okay, here we go.
I see people talk about this song all the fucking time, which has made it less impactful for me. And I know that we have in the past talked about how certain Taylor songs don't age with us as much. And for me, I loved Long Live when I was 14, and I thought that The Agency was the coolest thing in the world. And I wrote 13 on the back of my hand. Long Live was great for me then. Now, I just can't force myself to listen to it. It's, like, a little too, it's corny. It's a little corny. And I thought that the Rep Tour version of it was horrible. I thought it sounded so bad. I don't know what happened to her vocals or her mind when she did that. But I thought it sounded bad. But I like the imagery. The songwriting is good. It has some great throwaway lyrics that I think are really, the dragons, that's good. I like the bridge. It is weird subject matter, that's for sure. But I also like that the sparkly guitar gets to live another day with this song.
Sparkly guitar aside, it's really, really funny that you say that you think it's bad, because so my show was like the third or fourth show. So I stayed away from spoilers and I didn't know what was going to happen. So at my show, when she started playing Long Live, I just simply lost my fucking mind. I cried my eyes out. I was like, oh my God, another song. Because I didn't get to go to the Speak Now tour. So it was kind of a big deal for me to hear that song live. Anyway, moving on. So I thought it was fucking incredible. I have never, ever, to be honest with you, I have never, ever listened to it, except for maybe a couple of times in the own videos that I have myself, that I made, that I took at the show that I was at. So I actually, now that you mentioned it, I don't know if it is good. I mean, there's my perception of it. But I don't like that she mashed it up with my honestly one of my least favorite songs that she has ever put on a record and forced us to
I
think
agree.
Is good.
I hate
you know,
that
like
song.
there's a huge difference between being like, oh, here's me, for example, here's this is my lead single, I want everybody to listen to the song and have fun. It's like, okay, great. And then there's a song like fucking New Year's Day where she wants us to think it's really, really good. It's like,
I'm sorry, it's not. It's a flop. It is a flop. And again, it's like, you're not sorry. She kept shoving it down our neck.
She wanted us to love that song so bad. And you know what? I blame the Swifties and the Swiffers for allowing, like, egging her on, like the girl that wept her eyes out at the song at one of the sessions. It is a long song, which comes back to the weird songwriting. She could have cut out some of that stuff, couldn't she have? Like, I mean, do we care about whether the agency has kids or not? Can I gently ask that question to the world?
No.
No, we don't. We don't care.
Do I think that Grant is going to be his children are going to be pointing to some pictures someday of him and Taylor? No, because they hate each other now.
Do they really? Is that the juice on the street?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's the juice. I didn't. He was really mad when he got fired.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I completely remember this. I completely remember this now. Okay.
Long Live closes out the album. So we get 14 standard songs, and then we get the deluxe edition, which includes two of maybe my favorite Taylor songs. So the first one is Ours.
In my opinion, I would have to sit down and think about it for a long time. I'm going to say this. I think it's one of her greatest love songs, if not like at least second best love song. It's just so fucking cute. It's like so cute, and it's like so genuine. It like makes me cry because she was like so in love, and this is like so obvious that she was. And it's such a it makes me happy. It makes me so happy. I absolutely love that song. Baffling single choice. Absolutely baffling choice for a single. And the video, I can't even get started on. But I absolutely love it.
What is that video?
It's embarrassing. I don't even like to think about it.
It is.
This is one of my all-time favorite love songs from Taylor. And when I'm like compiling my all-time favorite list of all Taylor songs, it doesn't typically rank super, super high with everything else. But if you're like, love songs, this is like top of the list.
I agree. It's so cute. It's not jaded. And clearly, by the time that this song made it onto the album, Taylor was not dating whoever this was about. So I kind of like the fact that she put it on there anyway and continued to perform it with such conviction, because she really, like, her eyes sparkle when she sings this song. She just looks like she's feeling all of those emotions again. And that one line of people throw rocks at things that shine, like, wow! Wow, Taylor.
Definitely like one of the most universal lyrics that she has. It's just like very wise.
And also we love this because Scott Swift kind of gets dragged, and we like that.
Yes, he does get dragged, which is funny because I think, well, I guess the best day would have been the last time he was mentioned, but the time before that, he was in a wife beater with a baseball bat. And he's going to make somebody very sorry. So it's funny to hear all of a sudden he hates tattoos.
The progression of Scott Swift. I think this is his last mention as well. I think this is the last time he ever gets put in a Taylor Swift song.
Right, because then we have all the rumors about Scott and Andrea divorcing. And that being what Red is going to be about. In theory, that's what everybody said.
Yeah. Wow. What a stupid ass theory that was. So
fucking stupid.
So the next bonus track that we get into, Madeline and I are going to have a hard time talking about this one because we're stans. It's If This Was a Movie.
Yes. So this genuinely does rank top fucking 10 all Taylor Swift songs all time, which pisses me the hell the fuck off because she pays it not even dust, less than dust. She pays it specks.
It is appalling to me that this song was treated the way that it was.
We are in complete agreement about this.
For once. Yeah. For once, we agree on something. And this is in my top 5 songs. And every single tour, I make a million posts being like, please, you absolute A-grade flop. Play If This Was a Movie if you have any respect for my people.
She doesn't. She doesn't respect us.
She won't.
She, when I think about the 1989 tour, when she was on that kick where she would only ever play either 15 or Fearless, It's like, oh, so
why?
So,
or you belong with me.
So
move on.
So I can't get, you know, not only could I not get Wonderland, but also I can't fucking get if this was a movie. This is like what happens to me. It hasn't happened to me since it didn't happen to me at all on Red, thank God. But like the deluxe song, Come In With the Rain, The Other Side of the Door. And fucking, oh. If this was a movie, like all these fucking songs that she makes deluxe songs, and then she acts like they're pieces of shit. It's like, you know, you release them for a reason, Miss Swift. So where is it? If she ever did choose to play it live, we would finally have the answer to the question that has literally driven if this was a movie stands wild for the past, I don't, what, how long has it been? 10 years? Ish?
Oh, 10 years. Yeah,
10 years of if this was a movie, what is the lyric in the bridge? Is it,
what is it? None of us can come to an agreement on it. We have been fighting, ripping each other apart. And you know what? This discourse comes up, I would say, once a year. And it just comes back.
That doesn't sound like a lot, but if you think about a fucking deluxe song from 2010, that's a lot of times to be talking about.
And we want
about
the answers.
Yeah, and we want the fucking answers.
So what's your thought?
So
what do you think the lyric
is? I go back and forth. It's like every few months it'll come on and I'll listen to it and I'll be like, it could be either one. But I tend to lean more towards I've been waiting for you ever since you've been gone. But when I actually sit there and listen to it, I hear wary. It's like I hear it. She makes an E sound. E. What is she saying?
But this is my thing with Taylor. Her enunciation can be so terrible that for a long time, people thought that there was a mystery Eli.
Oh my God.
Being sung about in this song. God. Who is he?
It's like the Starbucks
Where
lovers
did they
thing.
Find him?
And like, these are all things that I never hear. I never heard Eli. I never heard Starbucks lovers. What do you think?
I think I'm the only person that thinks this, and I fight my corner viciously whenever this conversation comes up. I have never changed my belief. My belief is that the lyric is, I've been waiting for you, baby, since you've been gone.
Oh my God.
That's it. That is my thought. I refuse to change it.
Okay.
And no one agrees with me.
Okay. You know what? The thing is, I'm
no one agrees.
I'm like half with you because I definitely hear the E, but I don't know if I hear the B sound. I'd have to listen to it right now and really turn. I mean, all of the millions of times I've already fucking done that, gone back and listened to it again and again, turning it up as loud as my ears can take.
And do you know what the absolute fuck of it all is? The fuck of it all is that I have planned on 3 different occasions when I have met Taylor to ask her this question. And every single time I forget to do it. And then I get on Twitter and I'm like, y'all, I am a flaw. I couldn't remember. Literally the first time I met her in 2014, I said, oh my God, I have to ask her about the If This Was a Movie lyric. Forgot, met her on the 1989 tour, forgot, went to her house, forgot.
And you know, the thing that really gets me is that at this point, like, let's just say either you or myself or somebody else that's interested to know gets to meet her in the lover era, she, I bet you $1 million, will not fucking remember. I know it. I can feel it in my heart. And I don't know if I can live with that. Yeah. And I don't know if I can live.
No. She's going to be like, oh my God, that song? Haven't heard that name in a while. I don't know. I just forgot.
But I'd be like, Taylor, get out your fucking phone. Find the song in your phone, listen to it, and remember. You hear me? She's going to be like, I don't even have it on my phone.
Really think about it.
I don't even have that song anymore.
Something to note, this song peaked higher on the Hot 100 than ours. And ours was a single, and If This Was a Movie, it was a flop that was ignored.
You know
so
what? I never knew
that.
The
people want it.
The people loved it. I think, getting into the actual crux of the song, it's some of her best work. The lyrics are so fucking good. The production is so fucking good. I don't understand how this didn't make it onto the record. I mean, I guess when I think about it, like, it doesn't quite fit with all the other songs, but it doesn't fucking matter to me because it should have been a main song and it should have been on the tour and it should be played every night for the rest of forever.
It is also a cinematic song, so it really deserved a video. Like, think of the rain. Think of Taylor standing outside someone's door getting fucking soaked. Like, this is classic Taylor imagery that we need. All right, and then I don't want to spend any time talking about this next song because I fucking hate it. It's Superman.
So, Zach hates the song. I would like to say that I consider myself a indifferent. I mean, I don't hate it. It's it's very corny. It's so much cornier than I think anything she has written up to that point. I'll be fair. It's up to that point. It's really embarrassing. It's even to me like worse than anything. And I kind of like the song, but I'm gonna roast a little bit. It sounds like it belongs on the debut more than it belongs on her third studio album. You know what I mean? Like, it's very, very, just kind of childish.
I hate it. I think that Scott Swift deserves no real estate in these precious Taylor Swift songs. And I also have a personal vendetta because this song was a secret song on the Speak Now tour. And if this was a movie, is kept locked in a cage screaming for attention? That doesn't make sense to me. So that is Speak Now. It is an amazing album full of incredible songwriting. And this is Madeline's favorite.
Yes, this is my number one favorite Taylor Swift album of all time. It would take a really, really, really special album to knock it out of top place. No album that she's released since is ever going to be able to do it.
This is where we kind of get into the sad part of the year. And this part of the year makes me really sad because we don't often see Taylor in public upset. I feel like she's super guarded with her like personal feelings when she's out and about, and we get some really upsetting pictures of her. But first, this is around the time when the Jake Gyllenhaal stuff
starts to really kick off,
and there was a significant age difference between them.
Okay, so he was younger than John Mayer was when
Taylor Swift.
Yes.
So on the 27th, she performs, I don't know if you remember this, she performs in the airport in JFK.
Oh, bitch, I for remember. JetBlue. I remember, bitch. Don't think I forget. I remember that shit.
And then she gets on a plane for a six-hour cross-country flight with fans and reporters. Can you think of anything worse?
I cannot believe. You know what? I'm going to be honest with you. I remember the performance because I remember the pictures. I don't remember the detail that she locked herself onto a flight with fans and reporters for 6 hours. What happened there?
She did.
What happened there?
There's videos. She just like kind of, the reporters do like a merry-go-round of interviews with her. And she's just kind of like sitting in a window seat being herself, getting interviewed for 6 hours. Like, what if a bitch needed to take a nap?
No glass of champagne, nothing. Just sitting there, no peanuts, nothing.
So she goes to LA, and then on November 1st, she appears on Ellen, and I love this Ellen appearance. I think she looks stunning. That, like, lacy black kind of mid-sleeve dress. Her hair is pulled back. She looks so chic.
That's the one where she does Mine, right?
She does Mine, okay, yep. Acoustic, yep. Like entirely on the guitar, yes. And then she does Back to December. Okay. I stan this performance.
Yeah, I absolutely stan that performance of Mine. So super underrated. People do not talk about it nearly enough. But as a Mine aficionado and stan, I must say that it is incredible. And Mine should be performed acoustically as often as possible because it, not that it's the original song. I mean, it's not better than the original, but it is as good as the original, I would argue.
And I always forget that Taylor is actually like a very talented guitarist, and Mine shows that off very well, especially when she's playing her wood guitar. You know the one I'm talking about?
Is that the 12 string?
The like glossy wood one. No, not the 12 string, the other one. But it's like the same concept.
Yes.
Actually, maybe she did play the 12 string on Ellen.
Legend.
And her vocals were really good. I just think that if only Taylor could remember the words to Mine when she plays it live. She doesn't do that anymore. She always forgets something, which is offensive to my culture. This is where Ellen starts to really badger Taylor about her relationships and like put a slideshow on the screen of all the people she's dated. And I just don't like that. And I don't think Taylor liked it either. Like, I think she pretended to think it was funny, but I think it actually made her uncomfortable. The one I'm talking about is the one where Ellen hands her a bell and is like, ring this if you have made out with this guy.
And they put Corey Monteith on the screen, didn't they? That's what I remember from it.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
Okay. She definitely made out with him, just by the way.
You know what I mean? Why not? That's my whole thing about it. It's yes, like, wouldn't why not? You have done it, given the chance? I would have.
Ellen badgers Taylor about John Mayer during this performance, which is during this interview. And she asks about Dear John. And Taylor says, Ellen says something along the lines of, isn't this about John Mayer? Like, wouldn't, if you were John Mayer, wouldn't you think that this song, Dear John, was about you? And Taylor was like, I think that's very presumptuous. and said something about angry emails, and she popped off.
Every time that I think about it, I wish, pray to God, that I could go back in time and make this a reality. I wish that she had fucking treated John Mayer the same way that she treated Joe Jonas. Just, like, came for his neck.
Please.
Please. He deserved it so much more than Joe Jonas did. Like, I know that Joe was a dick, but he was a dickish.
He's a dumb boy.
At least he wasn't perhaps a predator, if I can speak my absolute truth. I mean, ladies, who would we rather see roasted on an open flame on Ellen? I personally would rather see John Mayer than Joe Jonas. Please.
Me too, and there's some real tea there. There's definitely some real tea that we will never get to hear about that I would like to know.
No, I would like to know.
And then also in this interview, she gets questioned about Jake Gyllenhaal, and Taylor says, "I'm always optimistic about love." And that makes me sad.
Ladies, love is a ruthless game. Unless you play it good and right. Mm-hmm. Everybody, foreshadowed. It is foreshadowed.
Bow. Please take a bow. So she's letting us know that she's very hopeful about this relationship. And that's something I really appreciate about Taylor, is that she really does seem to go into every relationship like it's brand new. And she is completely wide-eyed and not jaded about it until Reputation.
Until, one might argue, Wildest Dreams.
Dancing with the Stars. Taylor performs Mine and White Horse. I have absolutely nothing to say about any of her Dancing with the Stars performances.
Remember when she did Jumps on Fall?
Okay, I have something to say about that. But other than that,
it's Dancing with the Stars. That's what I have to say about it.
Then, also around this time, Taylor and Jake go to Big Sur, and they get ice cream sundaes and seem very friendly, according to an eyewitness. And then he reportedly flies her out to the UK on a private jet to spend time with him while he's doing promo.
I actually did never know about the Big Sur thing. I didn't know about that. I knew about the maple lattes, but other than that,
I don't think there are pictures of it, but there were eyewitnesses. So I think it's cute. Also interesting that the next time Taylor goes there is with Karlie Kloss. I'm just saying. That's all I'm saying.
Just put it out there for the girls to do with what they want.
Giving it to the Kaylers, who so desperately need attention.
Yep.
On November 10th, we get the CMA Awards, and Taylor looks stunning in that blue dress, and she performs Back to December amidst, like, there was a gate, it was in, like, a garden, and it was snowing. She looks so beautiful. She has a glossy red lip, and she gets a standing ovation, and she's very surprised by that.
So, a note, there was a video that was going around after, and her vocals were fine in this performance. They were just okay. But there was this video that was going around where at the end of the performance, you know, she does her, which was very trademark, especially for this era, that, oh my God, what? And it only, and it's very, like, drama. It's like, what? And there was a video going around that somebody had edited where, like, this, you can hear the sound guys up in the booth, wherever they are. One of the sound guys says, "Well, you still can't sing." And it's like Taylor can hear him in her ear, and she, that her reaction is her reacting to him saying that. It's not real, but it was really a very popular video. Yeah, it was all over Tumblr.
I forgot that.
It was mean. And there was really no reason for it. I don't know why it existed. Totally fake. I don't know who made it. I don't know for what purpose other than to be mean.
She played piano, and she really gave, I think she gave a lot of emotion to her Back to December performances, she did, which I like.
You know, and Taylor Lautner deserved it.
He did. He did. He worked so hard.
Yep, he did.
So then on the 15th of November, a mere 5 days later, Back to December is officially made the second single from Speak Now.
Well fucking deserved.
Well deserved. And she peaked at number 6, which is not bad for a ballad. That's pretty impressive, on the Hot 100. Yeah. And it received critical acclaim. I loved this because for all the haters, this is literally the Maybe I'm the Problem / I'm Sorry song that everyone was so thirsty for.
I know, and, like, the thing is, when that joke became, like, the joke that it was, Back to December already fucking existed. So it's like, have you ever heard it? Like, no, of course they didn't. because they don't give a shit enough. It's just some fucking, like, local thing to say. And, at you know, locals don't know Back to December like the rest of us do.
But then we got another performance of Back to December. And this time she does the legendary, iconic, wonderful, apologize mashup at the AMAs. Yes. And she foreshadows the future by debuting some bangs. And she wears a suit. And she wins Country Female. And she just fucking nails. She looked amazing. The vocals, so again, incredible. Not there, but she served such a look, and it was a very different look for her at the time. You got to keep in perspective that this was not the adventurous Taylor you know today. That was it.
I remember being fucking shocked when she came out in that fucking pantsuit. I was like, hello? Who is she?
And then she gives a Rolling Stone interview where she says, someone asks her, so you're not going to have a wild night out when you turn 21 in December? She says, I don't think I was born to be in the club, just to throw that out there. Did she lie?
No. And like to this day, I mean, what immediately comes to my mind, and this is so off the cuff, what immediately comes to my mind is when she was hanging out with Drake. What is it? His birthday party? Whose party was it? I don't remember. But she has like those gold like Drake's tattoos party. On. That was as close to like being in a like dance hall club situation that I've ever seen her. But what also comes to mind is when she was dancing with, what's his face? Hiddleston. Tom Hiddleston.
Where she just slides out of frame when she realizes she's being filmed. Love that.
Love it.
All right, so we've established Taylor, not a natural party girl, but we're going to let her live.
Yep.
So then Thanksgiving comes around, and this is, you know, this is some folklore in the Taylor Swift fandom. These candidates, you are right, Madeline, are some of my favorite ones. So she goes to Brooklyn to spend Thanksgiving with Jake Gyllenhaal and his sister. Maggie describes it as a good time. That's all she says. That's all she's ever said on the topic of Taylor Swift. Then they go to Nashville, where we get the iconic strolling with the maple lattes.
This is iconic. The images, ladies. I would like to talk to everybody about how in the video of them walking into the cafe, Jake Gyllenhaal does not hold the door open for her. And what happens?
Law.
What happens is we get begin again. Don't know how nice that is. The thing that gets me is that this fucking relationship, we had so little about it, but it's like when you listen to Red, you're like, holy shit. I already knew all
he
of
hurt
this.
Her worse
I already
than John.
Saw this. I saw him not open the door for her at the maple lattes thing. All they did was go to a cafe and get maple lattes, and it's like the biggest fucking deal. I mean,
these were Easter eggs before culturally appropriated Easter eggs, before she even realized that that's what they were doing. The connection between all of this, I mean, I feel like a tin hat or something. It's like really a conspiracy theory. She fed it to us. She said, you want the drama? Here it is. All of these basic ass Swifties that love All Too Well and also decide to hate Jake Gyllenhaal, you better be showing up at his door and giving him reparations, because it wouldn't exist without him.
Exactly. I, you know what? My opinion on the Jake Gyllenhaal and Taylor Swift relationship, I don't know that I really specifically have an opinion about him as being a Taylor Swift boyfriend. I have an opinion about him separately from Taylor Swift, which is that I think he's okay. I like him. He's fine. Yep, as for being fine with Taylor Swift, I'm like, okay. As for him being in the Red
Album. We actually
album,
don't have enough tea. What I think happened with Jake and Taylor is, he didn't show up to her birthday party, obviously.
We know that.
But I also think he cheated on her. And I think that cheating on Taylor Swift is the worst thing you can do to her. I get the impression that she really is not a fan of people who cheat. And she thinks that it is, like, the ultimate worst betrayal that anyone can do. So I think that he cheated on her, for sure.
Okay. I will take that. I think I could see that happening. But what I think happened is I think that he couldn't deal with how famous she was and how much attention it was getting, because he's a very, very private person. Mm-hmm. And he just, as she says in All Too Well, was running scared. He's like, I can't fucking do it. Gotta go. Which I think for her would be like,
the wind was in her hair.
Yeah. And I think for her, that kind of a fucking thing of just be like, I choose something else over you, be it another person, be it, you know, his own privacy. Like, it sounds kind of shitty when I say it. Like, oh, you're choosing your privacy over me. But it's, like, that kind of a thing where it's, like, something is more important to me than this relationship. And I think for Taylor, there was nothing that was more important to her than that relationship. And so I think that could have been deeply, deeply heartbreaking to her, which to me makes sense for the entirety of the album, for everything that kind of like everything that was in the Red album would make sense, as sad as it was. Like, that happening makes a lot of sense to me. He could have cheated, though. Yes. I mean, it's totally, totally feasible. But that's just my
It was rocky as well. It was very rocky. And we get this from We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together. Clearly, they broke up and got back together multiple times. So I think that it definitely wasn't ever, like, smooth sailing in this relationship. I imagine that he broke up with her a few times because he couldn't handle the press and the attention that came with it. And eventually she was like, all right, bye.
Yep, I've had enough of this shit. Mama got to walk.
So then we get one of my favorite pieces of food, which is the Thanksgiving special. So much good food.
Oh my God. I forgot about that. You're
okay,
so
okay, can we
right.
talk about the Back to December in Central Park?
Oh, mother. Oh my God. I had that on
Joni
my
Mitchell's
iPad.
Career ended on that day.
She absolutely killed all of the girlies that came before her and all the girlies who were going to try to
Every
come after her.
One.
She
That was it. It was over.
It was over. It was done. She said
the strings, oh my God, I can't.
Fucking, and ooh, I remember so being so fucking jealous of everybody that got to go and like be there. I think I actually
all those
knew,
flops sitting
I
there.
Knew a couple of those girls too. They were just like Tumblr girls, but they were lived in New York City. So they just got to like go and be there. Fuck them. It's just like,
I'm so mad at them. Yeah. That is a Taylor experience that I would actually like save up a bunch of money and pay to experience.
Oh yeah.
If I could, that would have been amazing. So yes, I mean, we get some amazing performances in this special. I think the worst one is Haunted. She is lip syncing, or they put the track over actual performance. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But they did, and it's, like, in a theme park. It's very weird. It's too much.
You said the theme park, and, it, like, I had this, like, That's So Raven moment of being, like, like, remembering it. Holy shit, I forgot about that. That has been repressed. I'm gonna watch that shit, too.
There was a cute performance of Mean, and there was that little thing where she was, like, she staged walking up the stairs and getting a song idea and then just stopping in her tracks.
Oh, I remember that.
Going to her phone and doing the voice note. The pictures of that moment of her in that fucking beanie, they will never go away.
I don't like that fucking beanie.
I'm over it.
I've had it.
Why was that
fucking
the picture?
Blue
I don't know why
beanie.
That was the picture.
Why does everybody like it so much?
It looks terrible. All of her hair is stuffed in it. She's wearing a purple flannel. Like, it's just not.
It makes it look like an alien head when people do that, when they stuff all their hair into a beanie. Yeah.
The Enchanted performance was good, but I think the second best one to Back to December was when she did Long Live on the Bus.
And actually, speaking of, if we're going to do a bad moment from that special with the beanie, we have to do a good one, which I see all the time, that gif of her in front of the bus, and she like mimes herself like as the Speak Now her.
Oh,
I love that.
Love that. Love that. Thank you, Queen, yes, for feeding us.
Literally,
food.
I ate good that day, and I've been
that,
eating it
that
for
special
years.
Was so good.
I've been eating it for years.
So then, okay, we're wrapping up the year, and it's December, which is her 21st birthday, and Taylor has a private 21st birthday party of her. She does karaoke. It was a small party. Like, it wasn't a big deal. So she has her 21st birthday party. Jake doesn't show up. If you have heard the moment I knew, you know what we're talking about. She says, please come. He says, no. There is some footage of her doing karaoke with Liz. And that's the only scene we get from the actual party.
Yeah.
So she has this party. It doesn't go well. And then we get a series of candidates that actually, like, hurt my heart. She looks so upset. I mean, Google them if you want to see them, but we'll probably post them on our Twitter. But they are the saddest candids. Like, she looks tired. She looks really sad. There's one of her walking with Liz where you can just see that she's trying not to cry. and she's just walking and looking really like downtrodden and just kind of like beaten down. She's like wearing basically sweats, which she never does in public and she hasn't done since. And then there's the ones of her sitting in her car on the phone.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, those are the ones that I think about all the time. And there's one of them that it looks like she's having an argument with somebody on the phone. Mm. And I mean, we can speculate all we want. I would like to think that I know who she's talking to. Only They're thing that's sad. Sadder is yeah. when after she does Ronin and she's like actually crying about it.
Yes.
But that's yes. the only thing that's sadder than these particular candidates that I can think of.
It's interesting that we get very few genuinely sad or moments that Taylor doesn't want captured on film. She's so strategic with the paparazzi that like when they catch her, like having a human emotion she doesn't want to show, it's very jarring.
Yeah, though I remember being shocked because up until that point, I had never, ever, ever seen her in outside of like a music video or a performance setting looking sad. Yeah.
And not like, I guess we'd seen her tear up, but that was because of a crowd or because of something that made her happy, not because of like something that had broken her yeah. heart. That was really bad.
It was,
but what we can, what we do know about this is that she was rehearsing for the Speak Now tour at this time. And she came in one day, as the legend goes, Andrew Swift's legend. She grabs a guitar in the middle of rehearsals and she starts writing All Too Well. So to conclude, the year, it was a big, big year for Taylor. She won her first Grammy. Speak Now came out. Mind leaked. She gave us some of the best songwriting of her career. And she had a lot of heartbreak.
That's the conclusion.
If you liked listening to this episode, you should absolutely follow us on Apple Podcasts. You should give us 5 stars in the podcast app. That's very important. We have a 5-star review on the App Store, by the way, Madeline.
Do you?
We have 45 5-star reviews.
Really? Does anybody yeah. say anything or is it just stars?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, you should go look.
Oh,
we have a lot of reviews.
I must go look as soon as possible. I love reviews, especially positive ones.
People saying really nice things, but I've realized that the Apple Store reviews don't translate to the podcast app reviews.
Oh.
So if you would please kindly go into the podcast app and give us 5 stars, maybe write a little something, say All Too Well sucks or something so that we know.
Stir the pot.
So that we know it's you. Yeah, say something scandalous. Also, follow us on the Apple Music podcast arena so that you can get updated on our new releases. We are really trying to get back into the swing of things. We've got 2 episodes planned for you coming. Also, follow us on Spotify if that's where you listen. And, you know, follow us on Twitter because we actually have started to use that quite a bit. At T-Swift Podcast, we are so happy to have all of you listening. We really appreciate it and your enthusiasm, even when it goes into harassing us to put new episodes out.
Sometimes we deserve it.
Yes. I realized that we had like a legitimate 2-month break between episodes.
Yeah. You know what? But bitches gotta eat. Bitches must eat.
Yep. And we're not getting paid. Don't forget. Yeah. We don't get paid for this shit. All right. So thanks, guys. We'll see you in the next episode.